Welcome to the Lost Dog Podcast at the Trans-Pyrenees Race number 2, supported by our race partners, 200 Magazine, Physique, Kinesis, Komoot, Pedaled, and Tailfin. I'm Ian Broom, and in this episode, we begin following our riders as they set off from the start line at St. John de Luz. They're embarking on an adventure that will see them cycle 1,500 kilometers and climb 40,000 meters in just a few days. This year's TPR is the first as race director for David Eyre, who's getting ready to welcome this year's riders into the tent for registration and bike checks. I ask him about some of the thinking behind the race.
TPR was the brainchild of Mike Hall, founder of the Transcontinental as well. And back in 2016, he and Anna started planning to run a race in the Pyrenees, scouting out locations, starting to put some thought into what that might look and feel like. Unfortunately, Mike died in 2017, and so Anna carried that torch on and in 2019 ran the first Trans-Pyrenees race. And so the idea was that you had somewhere that was incredibly beautiful, so this amazing mountain range, a race that would crisscross country borders, so moving between France, Spain and Andorra continuously, and also a race that could offer some really interesting and significant opportunities and choices for the riders. What makes the Pyrenees special as well is that I was meant to ride this race last year. So I was signed up, and if it had run last year before it was postponed by COVID, I would have had the chance to do this myself. So it's really nice personally to be here. And I think what stands out for me is just like the kind of rugged beauty of it and the way it changes between different places. So it's like no two mountains are the same, no two gravel passes are the same, no two small towns are the same. Like you're in the same place, but you're experiencing constant variance. And I think that that's really nice and exciting. And I think that there's something about that kind of consistent cultural experience, but like allowing for those like little moments which are really different for the riders is going to be something really nice.
David is joined by another Lost Dot newcomer in race coordinator Andrew Phillips, who recently rode the Transcontinental himself for the first time. How is he feeling as he waits to brief this year's TPR riders? And what would he be doing if he were racing?
I won't pretend I'm not a little jealous of the riders at TPR, but the weather's helping me get over that jealousy. It's absolutely chucking it down in Saint John de Luz right now. I'd be thinking about the weather right now. I'd probably be adding overshoes and waterproof gloves and stuff to my kit. I'd be thinking about my pacing as I set off. A lot of people will go off too hard at the start of this race. That's the nature of every race. Adrenaline and nerves and everything else get the better of you. Months of waiting, so they'll be straight out the gate, and there will be people who burn too many candles too early on. And as I say, you're going to really feel that when you're climbing some of these bigger cols.
Looking at the different routes that riders might take, there were opportunities for people to drop lower down into the kind of foothills of the Pyrenees or the flat roads that run alongside them. And we didn't want that to be the experience for the riders. If you're coming to the Pyrenees, you're going to ride in the mountains. And so these are ways that allow us to keep the riders there, but they also mean that they have to cross over the border repeatedly. So they'll be going through France into Spain, back into France, through Andorra, back into France, back into Spain. It's like constantly hopping along that borderline all along the mountains, and the way that we've done that means that it forces them to make those crossings repeatedly over the course of the first half of the race. Obviously it's a fixed route all the way through France for the vast majority of the way back.
There are short breaks in the rain as the registration tent fills with volunteers, sponsors and locals here to lend a hand. However, it's pretty clear we could be heading for a wet start to the race. Then, at just before 10 a.m, the first rider arrives.
And my name is Tristan Janmaert. I'm the 96. Yeah, I'm super happy. I'm here. I come from Saint Jean de Luz, so that's easy for me to arrive first here. Yeah, it's good for me to start from here. And when I arrive at the CP4, I say, okay, thing. I have to come back at the house, so yeah, that's nice for me. Yeah.
More riders arrive at the tent, and for some, this will be a second attempt at traversing the Pyrenees after taking part in 2019.
Yeah, okay, I'm cap number 51. I always get messed up with it. Heike Sturm.
And I'm cap number 98, Norbert Münch.
I did the Trans-Pyrenees race, the first one, the inaugural edition, and so it's great to be here again. The landscape, it's gorgeous. It's really, really, truly great. And being around there at night when you hear the sounds of nature, it's really fantastic.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm really looking forward to the Colle Suluo and Ubisk. Last time, when I was up there, I actually cycled up there at night, and it was beautiful. It was so stunning. It's a clear sky, moonlight, and the whole landscape just looked so magical. When I was on top of the Ubisk, I was just in tears. It was so, so incredible.
The corner.
Okay.
So if you just go
first
turn,
bike check.
Yeah, bike okay. check. You can do either. You can get your hat first, or you can get your bike check.
Yeah. Hey, I'm Lucy, and I'm cap 77. Yeah, we both did it back in 2019 and we both finished out of GC, so the goal is to try and finish within GC this time. As soon as I start riding, once I get on my bike, once I'm riding, everything makes sense. It's just leading up to it and all the worries about what you forgot and what you should have done, what you shouldn't have done. But once you start riding, then you're riding your bike and everything's simple.
Jana Kessenheimer is one of the women expected to do well. Like many riders, she first signed up for this second edition in 2020. Before the global pandemic led to consecutive cancellations.
Yeah, I'm so excited. I'm really, really looked forward to this moment for quite a long time. Yeah, it's so remote. It's kind of wild compared to the Alps. The wild horses, which is really cool. There's not some sausage shops on top, but nothing, which is really nice. Yeah, so I'm expecting beautiful wilderness. After 2 years of waiting time, here we are.
This year's race features so many great riders with many potential winners. That includes Samuel Thompson, runner-up the first time around.
I mean, it's so difficult to know how things are going to unravel, but I think I've looked enough into the route to sort of know generally what to expect. Although it's areas I've been through roughly before, there's always new places to go through, and things happen on the road, which in every event that lasts more than a couple of hours. There's things which happen which you can't expect, so it's those unexpected things which you come across which give you those bits of excitement, those memories that you take away. So it's the unknown bits which I think I'm most looking forward to.
We have six pairs starting the race, including Izzy and Ennis, the latter having raced in the first edition, but had to scratch after a bike braking collision with a cow. Caps 148 A and B, Stephen Dalton and Paul Williams, are also TPR veterans. They're hoping for a strong performance this time round.
I did the Transcontinental this year, so I feel like I have planned for this race better than I've ever planned for anything in my life. So I've gone from at about turn from just sort of winging it last time and seeing how it went, to now knowing almost where I'm going to be every single hour, where we're going to stop for food, where we're likely to spend the night, got a crib sheet for every single day with every climb on it, and our ambition is to win the pairs race.
I mean, I think it just depends who's in the race, doesn't it? But I think we're looking forward to hopefully doing reasonably well, although there's an awful lot of climbing and it's a bit weather dependent, but I think we're more prepared than we've been, and I'm really looking forward to just being out on the road with a friend and in a beautiful place.
Once everyone has been to collect their cap, tracker and bike check, it's time for the rider briefing.
I'm David, I am one of the organisers of the Trans-Pyrenees race and the Transcontinental race. Thank you all very much for being here today. Well done for dodging all of the traffic disruption, if not the horrendous weather. It's amazing to see so many of you lined up on the start line after 2 years of waiting as well, so really looking forward to getting going tomorrow.
Sure enough, morning comes and we have choppy seas and plenty of rain as the riders assemble at the start line in St. John de Luz. Riders slowly arrive ready to set off in their designated wave. And then the time comes.
Race number two, we'll be setting off the first wave in just under a minute's time. So good luck, ride safe, ride well, and we're looking forward to seeing you all out on the road. Okay, wave one. Away you go. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
For the next few hours, the riders battle the rain as they make their way along the first parkour to the summit of Col de Ispigue and control point one. It's immediately clear that Cap 59 is going to be one to watch.
James, I recognise your name from somewhere. James Loudon.
I've not done anything long, ever.
Oh, right.
But, so I've probably gone up too fast.
Yeah.
I used to do some racing and hill climbing.
So this is well suited to you then?
We'll see. We'll see. It's all right from now on, because I live in Poe, so like the next like 300k I know. But I've never done this bit, so.
So it feels like going back home.
It's going to be now. Once I get down beyond St. Jean-Pierre-de-Port, I'll be all right. It's going to be really fast with this tailwind.
Yeah.
Once you get over the next little lump, it'll be cool.
And all feeling good?
So far, yeah, probably a bit much in the legs, but it's just part of the fun, isn't it?
Izzy and Innes also make it to control point one in good time.
There's only been about half an hour.
About afterwards.
Yeah, there's been about half an hour of heavy rain, but that's better than the whole morning that was forecast.
Well, seems like you're having a good time. What's your plan for the next to get to parkour number two?
We want to try and get there. Ideally, there's a pretty big climb going back from France into Spain. So we're going to see if we can make that in daylight. It's a bit of a push. But if not, we'll crack on all the same. I think hoping to ride through the night tonight and see if we can get a nice hotel tomorrow.
Some riders will check into a local bike shop before a race to make any last-minute adjustments. For Robert Muller, Cap 151, arriving with a broken front fork, this meant hiring an entire new bike.
I still have to get used to it. The handlebar is wider and higher than I'm used to it, and I have to sort it out. Mm-hmm. It's okay. I can make it with this bike.
Yeah.
I'm not really in race mode yet. Just have to get into the race.
How's it going, Yara?
Yeah, all good.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's already pretty scenic. Like, so beautiful.
Yeah. How was the start for you?
Nice. I did actually expect, like, everyone is hard pushing, like usual, but it was okay. It was fine.
And how was that? How was that climb just there?
Yeah, beautiful. There were a lot of ponies. It was nice, yeah.
Like most riders, Angela Walker, Cap 11, arrives at the cafe at control point one, looking for something to eat. Again, like most riders, there is one main topic of discussion, the wet weather.
It's been fine, actually, but it just, I am kind of boiling in the bag with all my waterproof stuff on. But every time I think about stopping to check it off, it starts raining again. So I'll leave it on. Well, I'll certainly leave it on for the descent and then see what it's like when I get to the bottom. It's really nice, actually, because these two climbs that we've just done were the last two climbs that I did on TPR1, so some of it's been quite familiar, really. So, yeah, I'm feeling all right.
While most riders reach the top of Col de Ispigue and take in the first of many beautiful views and try to dry off, Julian Gravard, Cap 66, has a more important job to do.
I am sticking stickers on every pass sign. So you see this one? So yeah, they stick something on it. This, I sticked it 3 years ago during the first TPR. And this is my grandfather. He passed away 2 weeks before the first TPR. So I'm doing the second edition just to check if all the stickers are still there, and if they're not, I'm just gonna stick them again. And in 2020, my grandmother also passed away, so she followed my grandfather. So, well, the 2020 edition was cancelled, but I already had in mind that I was just gonna stick my grandmother next to him on every pass.
So, yep, the riders rolled out at 6 a.m. this morning from the first wave, finishing at 6:30, and started making their way up to the Col d'Ispigui. They've already had to tackle not just the multiple climbs and steep ramps on the way out here, but also some pretty tricky weather conditions. So we've had mixtures of strong winds, rain, mist, sun poking through the clouds as well. So I think dressing appropriately and keeping warm or cool has been quite a challenge for them already. But vast majority of the riders have already been through the control, so making good steady progress. We've got a few more to come through, but they all look like they're on track to make the cutoff at this point, which is good.
The riders leave Col d'Ispigui and start to make their way to the second parcours, which starts in Broto, keeps them high in the mountains, and eventually ends in the Spanish town of Plan. But how they get to the parcours is entirely up to them. A clear split emerges. Some riders follow the rain and head north into France, before coming back down to tackle the Col de Portalet. Others go south, hoping for a drier and ultimately faster route. George Barham, Cap 45, is not entirely convinced by some of the local signage.
It was pretty nice, like the last couple of K were amazing. Like it kind of really leveled off. Those signs though, like the ones that tell you the percentage, they lie a lot. Like some of the 1% were way worse than like the 6s or 7s, so it was a bit of a mind game, but yeah, it was great.
Yeah,
and really enjoyed it. Pretty amazing. The snow's a little worrying though for the way back, but it looks epic. Like, yeah, that's probably the nicest climb I've done in a really long time.
There's no doubt about the direction James Loudon is travelling though, forwards and fast. After making mincemeat of the early race mountain climbs, he's the first to arrive in Plan, just as night begins to fall.
I wanted to get here about half an hour ago, and then do a bit more of it in the light. I've just been pushing on like all day trying to get here, and then it's just like that road over the Col de Portalet is super tough and just got slower and slower. Col de Portalet was grim. I didn't even cross my mind to look at the other route. I signed up for this in 2020 and I started mapping it then, and then I just assumed that I obviously looked at it at the time and ruled it out.
What's your plan now?
I'm going to have a look at the gravel, and then because I've come all this way with 32s, makes sense to go and do it.
Yeah.
I'd like to go over it, but it's also going to be dark in there. Yeah, and it's not that cold either.
As James heads into the night and over the first significant gravel section of the route, Alexander Kopp and Neil Phillips are the next two riders to make it to Plan.
This morning was wet, and then, yeah, it's just been, I don't know, the legs haven't really been there, so it's just been kind of rolling with it,
yeah.
Turning the pedals. I'll make it over here, and then I'm going to stay the other side of this gravel section, get a bit of sleep, and then, yeah, try again tomorrow. Like, the wet weather was, it was fine. Really wet, but it wasn't that cold, and just kind of worked through it, so.
So what's it like to be back in there?
Oh, it's lovely, yeah. It's not forgiving. But no, it's really good.
Cap number two, Sam Thompson, also makes it to Plan and is getting some help finding accommodation.
How are you doing?
Has been great. I felt pretty crap on the Portalet. And
perdón, usted las horas.
I'm just thinking about being a bit cautious and just getting a couple of hours sleep and seeing if it helps, especially with being a nice voice, no. Especially if you're getting quite cold overnight and with the gravel section, I don't know how long that's going to take. So,
venga, merci a ti.
Yeah, I think I might get some sleep somewhere.
Further back, Jana Kessenheimer has taken an early lead in the women's race. She bumped into Marcus Zimmermann on the parkour, where they shared some of their challenges on the road.
I don't have my headphones, which is I can't listen to some music or podcast or what I usually do. This first time for me riding so long without any distraction. But I think it's easier to listen to the body. Like I regularly stretch my knees because I feel them faster. I think maybe it's not too bad. Yeah, it's a good challenge. Yeah.
Biggest surprise today was blown up in a tube on a climb.
Oh yeah, just in front of me.
Just in front of you, it was like boom.
It's really loud.
Really? Did you hear?
It was.
Yeah. like a gunshot, and the inner tube blew my tire.
Are you going to look out for any new inner tubes?
Yeah, probably tomorrow.
Day 2, and the sun is shining at control point 3. Overnight, James Loudon has been joined at the front by other riders, but there's more to it than that. While James heads south to take the longer road route to Oster-Savice, Robert Muller and Julian Rossard head for the short gravel route to the north. The race is on. Who will get there first?
So you chose the road?
The gravel, I thought the road was a bit longer, but also a little bit more climbing, but just the gravel last night was quite hard going. I punctured on it, got cold, lost interest. I didn't want to go through that again. These guys, it's still not down yet. But I'm going to head off, I'm going to try and get to the coast tonight. Would be nice to do next control point. And then, see how we go from there.
I took the worst road ever to get here.
What's it like?
I came from somewhere there, and the road was the worst road you could take to get here. Just rocks everywhere, and it like 30 kilometers took me 4 hours. So not even 10 kilometers per hour. Crazy. I had 2 flat tires, and now I went so slowly that I don't damage anything. But there's another guy standing up there and he has a flat tire and has no spare tubes.
This night I have 4 flat tires, 4 times. And I had 2 inner tubes and 2 patch, 2 stickers to put on. So I use everything. I have the 5 flat tire. And to finish the downhill, I put all the inner tube on the tires to keep riding, but it's not very good, the feeling. And I maybe on the road I will be careful and find a bike shop to change everything.
I'm not the second person here.
I'm second.
Yes.
It's not possible.
Yes, it's definitely possible.
What's your name?
Robert.
Robert Müller.
Yeah. Let's get you booked in. Yeah. How is this possible? I took the worst road ever to get here. The last 30 kilometers took me like 4 hours.
Did you puncture?
2 times, yeah.
How many spares do you have left?
Nothing.
The gravel isn't the only thing causing problems for the riders further back. Paul Williams is waiting for his riding pair, Stephen Dalton, to deal with a mechanical issue.
He's got one of these fancy wireless shifters, which is too good for its own sake. And so he's tried resetting it and he's now going to take the battery out and see if that works.
Yeah.
We've had a bit of a slow morning with mechanicals.
Hey, Stephen.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm
very well. I have a little problem that I'm just working out how to overcome. So my right shifter's died. It played up a bit this morning and it started going again. It's just that the last 30-40k it hasn't been shifting, so I've been working quite hard.
Simone Edder, Cap 126, is heading to Control Point 32 and has chosen the same route as the current race leader.
Yeah, now I'm heading to the CP and then I want to look what's going on with my throat and maybe I come back and go a little bit further.
Yeah, you've decided not to go for the gravel section in the north then. No. You've gone south. Why was that?
Yeah. I thought one gravel section is enough. And I think it's just a single trail.
But still other riders choose the rough stuff to the north. Ian Garbutt is Cap 55.
And how are you feeling about the gravel?
Not sure with my tyres. A lot of people have obviously got bigger tyres. Just got to give it a go. I didn't fancy the whole loop back round on the road. It's a hell of a lot further. So we'll give it a go. But it might backfire on me, you know. I might be walking, I might be mending punches, we'll see.
As more and more of our early frontrunners arrive at Control Point 3, it's clearer than ever that this is a race of choices. Making the wrong decision can have a huge effect on a rider's race, so it's important to bring the right gear. Max Pruer, Cap 31.
You didn't bring the right bike?
No. Sure, 200%. But that was amazing. But I have to come back with the right.
So what's your plan for the rest of the day?
Just ride. Straight, you know? Or day or night.
As day two comes to an end, our leader James Loudon makes good on his promise and heads east to Control Point 4, closely followed by our other front runners. Catch up with how it all pans out in our final episode as the riders hit the lighthouse at Control Point 5 and start heading back via the final long parkour all the way to St. John de Luz. Thanks again to our race partners, 200 Magazine, Physique, Kinesis, Komoot, Pedaled, and Tailfin.